You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13. This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
You can be a part of it with us, the NCAA Tournament Challenge. Each and every one of you can fill up to 25 brackets on the men's and women's side. That seems like a lot, but that's how you potentially win, right? Filling out the brackets of ESPN is free and easy. Download the ESPN Tournament Challenge app. Up to 25 men's and women's. See, that's awesome, though, that you can do that because that means you're going to have a better chance of winning. You can create and join groups to compete against others, to join the ESPN Radio men's and women's groups to play against us. The app also makes it easy to share your champion and Final Four picks across social channels. The app provides great info if you want to do a deeper dive on team-by-team previews, expert analysis, and historical tournament data to help you win your bracket. All right, men's and women's brackets are out there. And one of the biggest themes on the women's side is that Caitlin Clark in Iowa in the same region as LSU, which is certainly a little bit of a spin. And I don't know that they're ever going to operate this way, but I'm sorry, from like a TV marketing perspective, couldn't they just give Caitlin Clark like a bye to the Final Four? Wouldn't that be easier?
Oh, no.
Wouldn't that be better for us all?
No, we want the drama. We want the matchups. We want the ratings of it. Come on.
Absolutely. Especially the way that things ended last year. How spicy they got between her and LSU and Angel Reese pointing and doing the thing with her face. Like all that stuff. Like, that was awesome. I mean, and that's probably one of the things I'm looking forward to the most with March Madness is Caitlin Clark marching the Iowa Hawkeyes to the Final Four and trying to win the national championship after coming up short being the runner-up last year. Because if we're being honest about it, that's the only thing that's missing from her resume, right?
Yep.
Like, I mean, when you consider her being the all-time leading scorer in college basketball history, men's or women's, like, the only thing that she needs to cap off a historic collegiate career is winning a championship. And that's usually what we see on the women's side of the game when it comes to the best players. I mean, you think of all the notable players in recent years to be able to get it done. I mean, think about it. Diana Taurasi, and when you think about Candace Parker, when you think about Maya Moore, and if you want to go back to yesteryear, Swin Cash, who's the executive for the Pelicans now, Cheryl Swoops, Rebecca Lobo. Like, Rebecca Lobo was breaking down the women's bracket, and they finished off the segment when talking about her senior year where she went 35-0 and won the Natty. Like, that's what Caitlin Clark needs in order to, I guess, put the cap on an amazing, amazing college career. To not have that opportunity to win the title, to not actually have national championship on the resume, it would feel like it would be incomplete.
And it's something that we'll debate if she doesn't get it done. But Iowa's in a good place. Caitlin Clark and her squad in a good place. They won their third consecutive Big Ten tournament title. They're a number one seed for the first time since 92. I expect them to at least get to the Final Four, but it's going to be tough to get through South Carolina to cut down the nets. It just feels like everything, obviously, they're undefeated, it has been coming up South Carolina this year. So I think that we are set for an unbelievable tournament on the women's side.
Well, you got in that Albany 2 region. That's where Iowa is. UCLA is the 2 seed. LSU is the 3 seed. In the Portland 3 region, that's the side of the bracket that they will face if Iowa is to get to the Final Four in Cleveland. That's where USC is. Juju Watkins, the big-time player for USC. Everybody's saying, hey, if there is somebody that could stay 4 or 5 years and potentially break the scoring record, she would be it. As we've said, we hope that somehow the WNBA can continue to step it up and become a place where players, if they can take their talents there earlier to get a financial benefit by doing so, that would be good for everybody. And as you said, Albany won the region on the other side, South Carolina 32-0, and they obviously would be the favorite there in that. On the men's side of the NCAA tournament, the 4-1 seeds, not really controversial except for one. Maybe people were saying Iowa State could have been North Carolina in the mix there instead. But if you look at UConn, obviously the favorite right now. They win it last year. You've got Purdue as a 1 seed, as well as Houston coming off of a loss to Iowa State there. And Iowa State winning the Big 12 and UNC in the West, Which number one seed jumps out at you guys the most here?
Well, I mean, it has to be UConn, right? They've been the most dominant team in college basketball this entire season, and yet it feels like they got the toughest draw of any one seed. They've got the bracket where they've got three teams that have won their conference tournaments, and oh, by the way, you're still going to have to deal with Iowa State, and you still got to deal with Florida Atlantic, who made a run to the Final Four a year ago. So, I mean, that would probably be the one that I would circle and say, you know, they've got a tough go at it. And to think that they're going to go back-to-back, even though they've been so good throughout the course of this year, I don't know. I just think that's a tall ask for Dan Hurley and his bunch.
Yeah, the number one seed that I circle that I have the most questions about is Purdue. I don't know what version of Purdue you're going to get in the tournament. You know, they are number one seed back-to-back tournaments for the first time ever, but we know that they come up short. They came up short to a 15 seed last year. St. Peter's in 2022, Fairleigh Dickinson last year. So this is a team that performs really well in the regular season, but in recent years has come up short in the tournament, and I wonder which version of Purdue we're going to get this March.
Yeah, I mean, they rely on a big man, obviously, in Zach Edey, and the tournament forever has been about guard play. It doesn't mean it can't be about that. I mean, I look at North Carolina, and I understand they did not win their conference tournament, but getting Arizona as a two seed sets up a really interesting hypothetical in that conference, or in that brackets regional final. Caleb Love, who was part of the North Carolina team when they went to the finals years ago, is on Arizona now, and he would face his former teammates, RJ Davis and Armando Bacot, and obviously the head coach, Hubert Davis. So I think that draw is a lot harder. I know a lot of people are making a big deal about the UConn draw because of the fact that three of the final four teams from a year ago are in that conference, or in that region, excuse me, with FAU and San Diego State. I don't know. I don't look at that as difficult as everyone else does. I think North Carolina is a much harder draw in my mind. But again, could be wrong on this. Purdue, we mentioned. And then there's Houston, who has Marquette as their two seed. Mm-hmm. Duke is in there as a four seed. Wisconsin as a five seed. Nebraska and Texas A&M, by the way, play each other in both the men's and the women's, which is ironic considering the Trev Alberts aspect of it. Trev Alberts was the AD at Nebraska. He's now, literally as of what, last week or the week before, the AD at Texas A&M. And both Nebraska and Texas A&M will play each other in the men's and women's. I mean, that is remarkable. And we're going to just say it's coincidence? We're not saying it's coincidence,
no,
right?
No, but that's okay. What makes it spicy, though.
Yeah, totally. Yes,
yeah, I'm saying they should do that
way. They absolutely should do that. Yeah, but no, Houston is the number one seed that I'm circling. Like, I just got a feeling that Kelvin Sampson and Jamal Shedd are going to get this team to a Final Four. They're going to have a way to get a little bit of retribution from last year where they got bounced in the Sweet 16 by Miami. It's not going down like that this year for this team with the way that they can defend and with the way that Jamal Shedd can score. I just think that Houston has got to be one of those teams that you circle that's poised to go on a deep run in the NCAA tournament.
So if we combine both the men's and the women's and we add it up to 136 teams, if my math is right there, I could have been 68 plus 68. Mm-hmm. Is that 136? I think it is.
I was told there would be no math.
Yeah, same.
Well, I'm doing it incorrectly, potentially.
Yeah.
Which team has the most pressure? Andrea Carter, ESPN women's college basketball analyst, talks about the pressure on Caitlin Clark and Iowa to win a title.
There has not been more pressure than now. Caitlin has talked about the one thing missing from her unbelievable college resume is a national championship. There's more pressure now than ever. All season long, Caitlin's had different records to break, different games to win, different milestones to hit. And she has not only reached them, she's blasted through them. So I'm just curious if Caitlin's going to blast through the NCAA tournament. And I add to it, because as we look at this bracket, this right side, the side that Caitlin's on, this is a brutal side. So you got to watch Caitlin now, not just because you've been watching her all season, but because the stakes are extremely high and the bracket is really tough.
All right, so if we put both of these brackets together and rank the pressure, does Iowa have more pressure than South Carolina, who's undefeated on the women's side? Do they have more pressure than UConn, who won it last year? More pressure than Houston, like you just mentioned? Purdue, Smalls, as you mentioned, has been a really good team now for the last couple of years, and they lost to a 16 and 15 in back-to-back years. Mm-hmm. 16 in the first round, 15 later at St. Peter's. Is Iowa above all of these teams in terms of overall pressure?
I would say Caitlin Clark has more overall pressure. Iowa as a de facto to her. Because if Caitlin Clark was not on this Iowa team, even if they were the same seed, same team, we wouldn't be talking about them in the same manner. So I feel like as a team, South Carolina has more pressure on them to remain perfect and to get it done. But Caitlin Clark individually has more pressure on her than anyone in either tournament.
Yeah, I mean, South Carolina's used to being here. They won the Natty a couple of years ago. So, I mean, it's like they're going to be in it every single year under Dawn Staley. Now, to become interesting with Camila Cardoza being out for the first game of the tournament, seeing how they handle the first weekend of it will be interesting. But they're just so dominant. I don't know how much pressure is on them. And conversely, looking at Iowa with Caitlin Clark, I mean, this is Caitlin Clark's last opportunity because she's going into the WNBA draft. I mean, if they don't get it done, when's the next time Iowa's going to be on this stage? Like, I don't know. Like, that would be the question. Like, I just don't know. So I think there's a ton of pressure for her to get it done individually, but also for that program to get it done while she's been a part of it.
So much of the NCAA tournament the last 24 hours on the men's side has been about the idea of who's not in. Right? A lot of the Big East schools are complaining, St. John's, Providence, Seton Hall. We only had three teams from the Big East go to the NCAA tournament. And specifically, the five teams they talk about were just bids stolen from them because of the conference championships, right? You talk about Oregon winning the Pac-12. You know, we saw Long Beach State and what they did with Dan Monson, which was unbelievable. The idea that this guy was fired a week ago, they mutually agreed after 17 seasons, you know what, you can coach us through the end of the season. They didn't expect them to make a run. Kevin Keats, and North Carolina State took a bid from someone. Listen, their conference championships are what they are. If you want the best teams during the regular season to make the NCAA tournament, whether you're a one-bid league or a multiple-bid league, you shouldn't have the conference tournaments, and they're never going to say goodbye to that, which as a result, you could have the five teams stealing the bids like we had here.
But doesn't that make it more fun and exciting that we do have things that are up to be stolen? To CeCe's point earlier, if these teams didn't like it, they shouldn't have put themselves in a position to have their bids potentially stolen. You should make sure to handle your business during the regular season. I love the conference tournaments and how it's this big gear up for the tournament. And a lot of people get this primer where they get to sit down and watch the tournaments and get their eyes on these teams and some of the star players in college basketball that you might not be watching throughout the entirety of the regular season. So I love it. I love the fact that there's going to be drama and that there's things that are up for grabs.
Yeah, and just the intensity because it's a one-game playoff makes so much of a difference, right? The style of play is completely different than what we see in the regular season. So even if you're the regular season champ, there is a different level of urgency that every team has once we get to the conference tournament and on into the NCAA tournament, and I don't want to get rid of that. Like, that's why I love the automatic bid for these conferences, especially the one-bid conferences, right? Because it doesn't really matter what you've done in a regular season in terms of the level of pressure that it takes in order to get through your conference tournament and win the whole thing. Like, the regular season is the tune-up to when it matters the most once we get to the postseason. So I love the idea of the playoff scenario where each team can go home, and it doesn't matter what you've done up until this point. It's about being your best on that day and having a chance to win in advance.
All right, fill out the brackets with us here. It's free and easy. Download the ESPN Tournament Challenge app. You can fill out up to 25 men's and women's brackets for more chances to win. You create and join groups to compete against others. Join the ESPN Radio men's and women's groups to play against us. The app also makes it easy to share your champion and Final Four picks across your social channels. The app provides great info if you want to do a deeper dive, team-by-team previews, expert analysis, also historical info to help you build a winning bracket. All right, coming up, Justin Fields is on the Steelers. We'll get to that next on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRICEbikes.com.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and The Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Justin Fields has joined Russell Wilson in Pittsburgh. We will get to that. But some breaking news, courtesy of our friend Field Yates. The Dallas Cowboys converted a $5 million roster bonus due to quarterback Dak Prescott on Sunday into a signing bonus, creating $4 million in salary cap space in 2024. The move reduces Prescott's salary cap number to $55.455 million, while two extra void years were added to the deal for cap purposes. Void years now through 2028. This does not prevent the team and Prescott from further negotiating a long-term extension, but provides Dallas with immediate salary cap relief. Again, what you need to know, Dak's salary number, salary cap hit this year, goes, quote-unquote, down to $55.455, $4 million less than it was previously. So basically from $60 million to $55
million. Yeah, I mean, I don't understand what took them so long to do this. Right. I mean, if this is not going to get in the way of future negotiations, then why didn't they just lower the cap hit in the first place before the start of free agency last week? Like, that's the point I don't understand. This could have been done a month ago. Why did you wait until the second week of free agency to make this decision? It just doesn't make any sense to me, and it doesn't reflect the level of urgency that I think Dallas should have. Why they have this finite window with this current core of players?
Yeah, this is confusing, the timing of this. I expected when you gasped over there, Evan, that you had some news on Dak's deal, that it was going to be a completely new one, that the thing that we've been talking about was going to get done. Because you're right, if that's not the case, then why wouldn't you have done this in advance of the beginning of free agency?
There were also ways, and maybe there still are, but it doesn't feel like it, there were also ways to reduce the cap hit even more this year by converting more money into a bonus versus what it is right now.
Well, that's why you add the extra voidable years on the end of this thing, right?
But it's only $4 million.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying you added two voided years now. You added two more, so it's just the extra void years allow you to convert more of his base salary in 2024 to signing bonus to lower the cap hit in the immediacy. So if they feel like there's a move to be had, maybe not in signing a free agent, but maybe trading for a guy, they could lower that cap hit to be able to absorb a bigger salary if need be.
Okay, you're going to have to explain this to me and maybe small as you know this and everybody else so we understand this. So basically you're adding quote-unquote fake years, void years,
yeah,
at the end of the deal. So it's kind of a sliding scale of, oh, hey, Dak, we need a few more million. We'll add it to that for 3 years from now, and we're still going to pay you the money, but we lower the cap hit. But it doesn't rework the deal, extend the deal, or really do it of significance. So basically he's only going to be willing to do it if it's worth it. Right? Is that what we're like?
What,
hey, we have it. Hey, we have a chance to get so and so. Would you be willing?
No,
to
Dak
work
has
this?
No control over that.
No control. So no, why did they do more? Because they don't want to put more
in
the future.
Well, they don't have to. If the move is not made, then why push more of that money into the future? You see what I'm saying? Like if they don't have to, they won't. But just by adding those extra couple of void years and lowering Dak's cap hit now by the conversion of that base salary, you at least present the opportunity. Like, hey, we're opening the door for another bigger move if we need to. But even in the short term, we can add in the margins with guys that aren't going to cost as much in free agency.
But this gives you no indication that they're going to work out a long-term deal or not work out a long-term deal, right?
No, it doesn't feel like it. Doesn't feel like it right now. Now, here's the thing. The Dallas Cowboys would be hard-pressed to do better than Dak Prescott.
Yeah.
I think he's a top 10 quarterback. He made All-Pro last year. It was the best season he's had since he's been in the NFL. I don't know why they wouldn't want to keep him, unless what Dak was asking for was a number that Jerry Jones and the Cowboys weren't comfortable going to. And here's the thing. I know that there might be a little bit of sticker shock when it comes to some of these new quarterback contracts. But, I mean, $60 million is going to be the number in order to get something done. If the Cowboys aren't willing to pay Dak Prescott $60 million, then they're not going to have Dak Prescott on this team long term.
Yeah, the market is what the market is. It's going to dictate the price.
Yeah.
I just... It's very confusing to me as to what the holdup is with this, why they're waiting. If he is the answer long-term for you, why wouldn't you have just gotten this done before a free agency? Why wouldn't you have just taken this major piece off the board and then move forward? The further and further we get away from this, and maybe I'm reading this wrong, I'm wondering if they are really believing that he's their answer long-term.
But and I'm with you right there, Smalls, because it's only going to get more expensive as the offseason goes on.
No doubt.
Like, there are going to be quarterbacks. Trevor Lawrence is going to get a new contract. And undoubtedly, he is going to be one of the highest paid players in NFL history.
Tua.
It's going to be north of whatever Joe Burrow got. Tua's contract is going to be somewhere in the 50-something million dollars per year range. Like, these are quarterback contracts that are going to be happening in the coming months. And as those guys start to push up the number or where the market is going to go, Dak Prescott is going to keep pace by keeping distance between what his contract pays him versus what those guys are getting based on the body of works from all of them parties involved. So it just doesn't make any sense for the Dallas Cowboys to play out the string with this one, just because I don't know that your alternative to Dak Prescott puts you closer to your ultimate goal, which is getting a title.
Let me add on. Dan Graziano, our buddy, ESPN NFL reporter, tweets at Graziano, at Dan Graziano ESPN. Important point on this is that they couldn't have added the void years without Dak's permission, so they are working together at least a little bit. Extension still possible. Okay, like, you know, the one thing that jumps out at me is, if this is going to sound crazy considering the numbers we're talking about, if the market value for somebody as good as Dak is 60, he's now on a below market value deal at $55 million, right? In terms of the cap hit, technically below market value.
Yeah, I mean, he's below market value, but the cap hit and the cash is not the same thing, right? Like, not to get too complicated, but
$55 million
cap hit is bumped up because of the prorated portion of the signing bonus. Dak Prescott this year is only getting $34 million. So that's grossly underpaid. So, I mean, Dak is going to want to get his money. And so it makes sense for the Dallas Cowboys to try to figure that out, to try to work that out. We'll see what ends up happening. I think the Dallas Cowboys are going to be forced to pay Dak a number that makes them uncomfortable. But such is life in the NFL. That's the cost of doing business. To me, it's about adding around Dak as opposed to trying to lowball Dak Prescott in these negotiations.
Dak Prescott is significantly better right now than the two people I'm about to mention, but it is amazing as a point-counterpoint. The Dallas Cowboys lowered the cap hit for Dak Prescott to $55 million. Meanwhile, the Pittsburgh Steelers have Russell Wilson and Justin Fields for like $5
million. Yeah.
Think about that. Dak Prescott's much better. Is he $50 million better than those two guys? Probably not, right? And the Pittsburgh Steelers, just if those guys are good in any way, shape, or form, just like good, just top 17, 16 quarterbacks in this league, they got such a steal. It's remarkable to think.
Well, that's probably what Jerry Jones is looking at, though, right? Like, the Pittsburgh Steelers had Mason Rudolph, Mitch Trubisky, and Kenny Pickett as their starting quarterbacks, and they went as far as the Dallas Cowboys did.
And just like that, flipped it. Right?
Well, I mean, well, yeah, just like that, flipped it. But I mean, I guess
but
my
the
point
results
is,
are the same.
But the results are the same. Like, yeah, like I'm spending, they're spending $5 million on their quarterback room, and the floor for them is the wild card round. Meanwhile, that's kind of been the ceiling for the Dallas Cowboys, and they're paying Dak $40 million a year, and he's got a $55 million cap hit in his final year of this contract. So I guess that therein lies the rub for Jerry Jones, and that's where the evaluation takes place. But to that, I would say, with the team that you currently have, you have to pay Dak Prescott because you are in your window to win a championship. I think this is going to force the Dallas Cowboys this offseason to do something that they're uncomfortable doing, which is mortgaging future draft capital and mortgaging future salary cap space in order to put the pieces around Dak to go on a championship run.
Again, for those just tuning in, the Cowboys, Perfield Yates, and Dak Prescott have reworked his contract where he is now going to make $4 million less in salary cap space. They're going to save $4 million in salary cap space, 55.455 versus this 69.455.
But they're on the right track, though, Ev. I mean, if they're adding voidable years into the future, what they're saying is cap space beyond 2024 be damned. We are going to try to add pieces this offseason. It might be lesser free agents. It might be via trade. But we are going to try to add to the roster that we currently have to try to make a championship push.
All right, coming up, we are going to dive back into the NCAA tournament. Our college basketball analyst, Seth Greenberg, is going to be here. But first, CeCe has this from Vivid Seats.
Yes, secure the seats and the memories this year from Vivid Seats, your home for every dunk, every slap shot, and every stolen base. Vivid Seats celebrates fandom with unbeatable rewards like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. With Vivid Seats rewards, you earn with every purchase. From buzzer beaters to walk-off home runs, Vivid Seats has a great selection and great prices on all the games that matter to you. Just visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Well, the NCAA tournament is going to be a hot ticket. Hot Ticket brought to you by Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN. Get great deals on the hottest tickets. Experience it live. Along with Michelle Smallman, Chris Canty, Evan Cohen with you. Seth Greenberg is here, ESPN college basketball analyst. NCAA tournament, men's and women's set here. Let's start on the men's side. We're going to have Rebecca Lobo later to analyze the women's side of the tournament. What jumps out at you more? Who's in or who's not in?
Probably news who's not in a way, because you think about the Big East, and you think about the Big East preseason, people thought 6-7 teams. Obviously, the overall number one seed, Marquette, kind of slipped a little bit. They went down to a number two. Creighton, a team that everyone talks about, maybe can make a deep run. Well, is there anyone else? Oh, there's no one else. So they get three teams in the field. Mount West gets six. And look, the Mount West is a great conference, great coaches, great venues, brutal travel. They had a nice season. But the Big East did to himself a little bit. But they are more than a three-bid league. St. John's, the way they finished the season, having those Creighton win, obviously huge. You think about Seton Hall. They beat the overall number one seed. Providence got hurt because Bryce Hopkins went out, yet they found ways to win. But they deserved at least a fourth team, especially when you see some of the other teams at the end of the bubble get in. A little bit surprising. And I tell you, it hurts the Big East. Madison Square Garden, the world's most famous arena, incredible energy in the Big East tournament. But having only three teams in is a bad reflection on your league.
Coach, UConn, Purdue, Houston, North Carolina, those are the number one seeds. Which one is the most vulnerable?
You know, I think, you know, we look at the thing. I think it's going to be Houston. And the reason I think it's Houston is because, one, the bracket they're in. Like, their second-round game, if they're going to win and Texas A&M was going to win, that is going to be a violent game. It's going to be a violent game because the best offense for both teams is a missed shot. One team rebounds 40% of their misses. Houston rebounds about 38% of their misses. Both teams can get stuck offensively. Dynamic guard play, though. Matchup in the backcourt, Jamal Shedd.
He's a monster.
Is absolutely brutal. But Wade Taylor for Texas A&M, he was the SEC preseason player of the year. That matchup will be dynamic. I worry at times Houston, their lack of depth in their front court because they've had injuries. And then at times they get stuck offensively. So I think Houston has an issue. The thing about UConn, people say, well, you look at UConn's bracket. UConn's bracket is perfect for UConn. All right, ask me why.
Why?
All right, it's a great question. Because Danny Hurley loves a cause. Danny Hurley's a guy that has a chip on his shoulder. Danny Hurley's a guy that lives to be disrespected. They live in the moment, this UConn team. They really do. Like, I talked to him last night on our way to New York, and he said, hey, the only thing I'm worried about is this. All right, you know, hey, I understand what they did. That's okay. Don't worry about it. Big East got blanked. You know, we got blanked. Makes no difference. We're worried about what's in front of them, what's in front of us. And I think that's a really good approach because in the end, hardest bracket, easiest bracket, you get to your second round, you're playing a really good team that probably won 25, 30 games, that expects to win, that has confidence. Just go and play who's in front of you.
Coach, one of the things we love about March Madness are the upsets, the Cinderellas. Who do you have circled as the Cinderella that people should be looking out for this year?
Yeah, I think Oregon's going to be interesting. Dan Altman never has lost a first-round game in the NCAA tournament. That's a full-grown nugget right there now.
Yeah.
But the bigger thing about Oregon is now all of a sudden they're healthy. And finally, Dante is back. If you look at what they did in the NCAA in the Pac-12 tournament, the last Pac-12 tournament, it's even weird to say that. All right. They were terrific defensively. Dante's averaging about 20 points a game. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, Jackson Sheldon is an elite point guard. They're an older, more physical team. They're playing their best basketball. And finally, Dante was injured all season long. He's a seven-footer who you can play through. I think they can make a sneaky run in the tournament. So I would think an outside-the-box team, a team that had to play their way into the tournament. I think Oregon is an interesting selection.
That's not the Farnham bias, is it?
No. But there is a Farnham bias. No, that's a Dana Altman. Like, he does a great job coaching situational basketball.
Mm-hmm.
I think preparation, people understand it's matchups, but you also got to look at, you know, who's good in terms of game preparation and who is hard to prepare for. Like, you know, you got 36 hours to prepare for your second round game. So, like, what's a team that's difficult to prepare for? I think that's something that, you know, in the back of your mind, you got to think. And that's why, like, I like Iowa State because they're hard to prepare for. You can't simulate their sideline defense, you know, even though they're a number two seed. So you start looking and say, who's difficult to prepare for? How can you prepare for Kentucky's guards? You know, they got four guys that are coming at you warp speed that can make plays. So you look at just teams that are hard to prepare for in a 36-hour turnaround.
We're talking with Seth Greenberg, ESPN college basketball analyst, who never in his life is going to experience the critique that I'm hearing from Bristol. You're not loud enough. We got to get you closer to the
that is, wait a sec.
And that is that not unbelievable?
I feel like I'm screaming. Bristol, do you hear me?
Here we go.
All right.
So, okay, we can go from the top or what?
So, Coach, a couple of things that, you know, people are complaining about the teams that aren't getting in, the five bids that were, quote unquote, stolen. The thing that I don't understand, I've never understood, is why we don't have the same selection chair for multiple years so you guys as coaches know how to actually schedule. Because criteria changes every year. Will we ever fix that?
I think we need to fix it. We need to have a set criteria that everyone in the room goes by. Because you got to understand, those guys in the room, they all have their own criteria.
Right.
So, I mean, some guys will think, you know, strength of schedule. Somebody will think quality wins. Who's the best team you've beaten? So I think that's really important. Look, big picture, and I know people aren't going to want to hear it. You see the teams that were left out. You see the quality of the one-bid leagues, which is not very good this year. Because why? NIL, transfer portal. If you're a good player in a low major, you're going to a mid-major. If you're a good player in a mid-major, you're going to a high major. So what happens? Those one-bid leagues are basically getting pilfered. So I think what's going to happen is we're going to have the bottom 16 one-bid leagues. All right. Right now we have the first four. We're going to have four regions of the first four. 16 teams, they're going to play their way into the bracket. And now we're going to have more opportunities. You can't just financially, you have these mega conferences. You're going to have conferences with 20 teams, 25 teams. All right? They're not going to want to only get six teams in the NCAA tournament. You're going to need more teams. So, well, your teams are 7 and, you know, 8 and 10. And this, that's great because they're playing great competition every single night. When you create these mega conferences, you can forget about your non-conference strength of schedule. Mm-hmm. Because each and every night you're playing a like-type team. You're playing a team that's on a level playing field. So I think something has to happen in terms of expansion. I don't think it's got to be, you know, 100, but I think eventually, gradually, it doesn't have to jump right to 96. I think gradually, just like we went from 32 to 64 to 66 to, you know, to where we are today to 68, it happens. The last time I checked, every time that they added teams, tournament's still pretty good, I think.
Pretty good.
Last time I checked, it's pretty good.
It's pretty good. And Coach, I wanted to ask you about it because you kind of led me where I wanted to go with the quality of conferences and how that actually plays itself out once we get to the NCAA tournament. I mean, the SEC, the Big 12, awesome conferences during the regular season. Do you expect that playing in those tougher conferences will have any bearing on what we're going to see over the coming weeks in the tournament?
Yeah, I think playing in a great conference and having games where you have to raise your temperature each and every day actually gets you ready for the NCAA tournament. I think when, you know, you think about you're playing every single night, you got to be at your very best to have a chance to win. So I think, you know, like the Big 12 and the SEC have dominated college basketball this year. They're terrific. And I think that's an advantage because you're playing good teams, you're playing different style teams. Now, the one question I have for the Big 12 is, it is the most physical league in college basketball. All right. Literally, it's like, you know, you could get arrested at times in games like that. It is so physical. how the game is going to be officiated in the first two rounds, because these officials want to advance. So they're being judged and evaluated as well. So how the game is being officiated, that physical conference of the Big 12, they redefine a foul. Now they're going to get into the NCAA tournament. And now all of a sudden, maybe a bump, a hand check, riding a guy off a line. Those things are fouls. That could have an impact on the tournament. But the SEC and the Big 12, two different leagues. SEC, explosive offensively. Mm-hmm. Big 12, absolutely physical defensively.
Coach, we're sitting here. I see your bracket in front of us. A lot of notations.
This was
there.
Done in about 2 seconds. So okay. I mean, I might change it, but I might just stick with my first inclination.
Okay. Well, can you share with us who you have in the Final Four and who you have cutting down the nets?
Yeah, I had your Illinois team close.
Oh, you did?
I had them close, but then they faced UConn.
Oh, okay.
And that was a problem.
It is a problem.
UConn is a problem for me.
They
people.
Are a problem.
All right. Look, I have UConn and Illinois. Obviously, UConn coming in. So my Final Four is UConn. I just think they're the most complete team in college basketball. They can play fast, slow. They can beat you defensively. They can beat you at the rim defensively. Arizona beating North Carolina. And think about this. Carolina, Arizona. R.J. Davis, player of the year in the ACC. Caleb Love, player of the year in the Pac-12. Oh, by the way, they played together a year before.
Yep.
It didn't work very well.
No.
Yeah. All right? But both of them had great years. So I have Arizona and North Carolina. I have Arizona come out of that. So it's UConn and Arizona on the other side. I've got Houston beat. I think they can get stuck offensively. So I've got Houston and Kentucky coming down, but I have Kentucky winning that basketball game. On the other side, I have Purdue and Tennessee. I think it's not Purdue. I think it's Purdue. I think their backcourt is not appreciated. I think as long as Braden Smith is healthy, I think they win that game. Purdue and Kentucky, I got Kentucky's backcourt taking that game over, though. They're just Reed Shepherd, Dillingham, Wagner, Antonio Reeves. They got so many different ways. Now, they got to guard a ball screen. Like, you got to keep the ball in front of you. So I got Purdue and Kentucky. I got Kentucky win that game. I got UConn beating Arizona. And then I got Connecticut going back to back. Everyone's got Connecticut. Either everyone's going to be going like this tomorrow or, you know. But Connecticut, you watch them. I go watch them practice all the time. They treat every single day like it's the first day of practice. And you know, as a player, yep. I mean, like when you have that energy, that passion, that ownership, that accountability, every single day, all of a sudden you continue to get better. And they've got a great collective responsibility. They really embrace their roles, and they're a team that really trusts each other.
Coach, undoubtedly, there'll be a little-known name that becomes an outstanding performer throughout the tournament. I think back to a few years ago in the NCAA tournament with a point guard from Murray State becoming a star in Ja Morant, and people actually had a chance to get to see him on that stage in March Madness. So I'm curious, who in this tournament will be a household name by the end of this thing?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. I think in the first round, Tucker DeVries, I think they're going to win the first round game at Drake. I mean, he could be Doug McDermott.
Wow. Tucker DeVries, and his dad's the coach, right?
Same deal. And by the way, his dad was an assistant to Greg McDermott
prior
to that. Tucker DeVries is 6'7", really, really skilled, can shoot it. You can post him. He can step out and make threes. He comes off ball screens. They play beautiful offense. I mean, Drake is a team. I've got them beating Washington State, and I wouldn't be surprised if they even advance further. Very, very well-coached team. The problem is they have Iowa State next, and Iowa State, they do not let you run offense. Like, they're not the most talented team in the country, but they are the most relentless team in the country. The two hardest-playing teams in the country are Houston and Iowa State, and you saw what happened the other day. Iowa State absolutely just boat raced Houston.
Seth Greenberg will be on Get Up and all throughout ESPN today. Of course, breaking down everything college basketball. We appreciate his time. Great stuff as always. And you will appreciate the time that True Green spends at your home. If you're ready to elevate your lawn game without breaking the bank, True Green has been the trusted choice for over 2 million homeowners for over 50 years. I know I'm one of them. Visit TrueGreen.com today and discover the easiest and affordable way to achieve a pro-level lawn guaranteed. Plus, enjoy True Green's verified price matching, ensuring you get the best lawn for the best price. Visit TrueGreen.com and transform your lawn effortlessly. That's TrueGreen.com. Your dream lawn is just around the corner.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
It is time for all the small things here on Unsportsmanlike alongside Super Bowl champion Chris Canty and Evan Cohen. I'm Michelle Smallman. We're just going to run through a couple of interesting things I found over the weekend in the wide world of sports and entertainment. First things first is, CC, I need a ruling from you. Yesterday, Big Ten tournament. Illinois, Wisconsin playing in the championship. A little show beef between myself and Evan Cohen. Illinois coming out on top, 93-87. Second Big Ten tournament champs in 4 years. Do I get bragging rights over Evan for this?
Yes, you do.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Your alma mater takes it to Wisconsin in
the
conference tournament championship game? Absolutely. You have bragging rights for the rest of the year.
For the rest of the year?
The rest of the year.
Okay.
The rest of the year. Or at least until football season kicks off.
I was going
to
say.
Oh, wow.
At least until football season kicks off.
Okay.
Then I think things will be a little bit different.
It ain't no fun when
the rabbit got the gun. And that would be Wisconsin on the football field against Illinois.
Typically, yes.
Yes, no doubt about it.
Typically, it doesn't end well for my Illini.
It doesn't end well, yeah.
Okay, but I didn't know if it was... You know, oh, okay, it's just the Big Ten tournament. You don't really get bragging rights. It's not like it happened in the actual NCAA tournament. So I needed a ruling from you.
No, it actually does matter, yeah.
Okay, great.
It does matter.
Yeah, you get it. I actually think you get it. I think you absolutely get it. But again, football comes around, maybe a different story.
So I better really milk this while I can.
Take full advantage of what it is right now.
I thought for sure you were coming in today with all Illinois gear.
I'm saving it for Thursday when they play.
Okay, my bad.
You know what I mean?
I didn't realize of the 5-12 matchups, they're picking JMU with the shortest odds to upset the number 5 seed. So,
okay, bring it.
On Wisconsin to the couch after you lose in opening weekend.
Bring it. Keep deflecting from your team that everybody thought shouldn't even be in.
Well, we're in, though. We're in, though. It happened. We're in.
Kind of.
Well, the play-in. Yeah,
you're in.
It counts. Field of 68.
You're
dancing. We're in. Exactly.
You're in-ish.
Yeah, we're in-ish.
You're in-ish.
In-a-jace. In-a-jace. There you go.
I say you're in.
We're in. We're in.
You should be pumped by it. Look at this. All of us. All of our teams dancing. So
all of
exciting.
Us. How about that?
Okay, you guys. So you know that I'm in my conspiracy theory era, my investigative journalist era with all this Kate Middleton stuff and things that are happening with the royal family. So I want to apply that to the NFL because we had some interesting tweets from Stephon Diggs over the weekend. And I wanted to bring them to the table. And you guys tell me if this is something that we need to look into. So he tweets on March 15, just a heart. Then he follows that up with ready for whatever. Okay. Then on March 16th, he tweets, well, ... Then he tweets 19 hours ago, God, I trust you. Do we think that this is somehow a message being sent to the Buffalo Bills? Or do you think I'm just so deep in all of this Kate Middleton conspiracy theory stuff that I'm reading too much into it?
I want to say you're reading a little bit into it, but I can't go there until we get to the other side of the NFL draft, right? Because there are a couple of different spots in the calendar where you see veteran players get traded. One is at the start of the new league year, which was last week, the start of free agency. But the other inflection point is the NFL draft, and that's usually where you see big trades with veteran players happen. I mean, once upon a time, we saw A.J. Brown get moved for a first-round pick from the Tennessee Titans to the Philadelphia Eagles. So I think that could be a place where Steph Diggs could be moved if the Buffalo Bills don't think him and Josh Allen could coexist. So I don't think it's doing too much to read into what Steph Diggs has put it out there in the Twitterverse. You might be onto something.
We've been talking about tension there for a while now, and then during free agency, he's tweeting this stuff. I don't know.
So Steph Diggs with a royal announcement?
Maybe.
He could be out there?
The networks are on standby. I don't know.
So let me ask you this. If I told you you can get two of these guys for $10 million or less, hypothetically, Odell Beckham Jr., Tyler Boyd, Mike Williams, Michael Thomas, DJ Chark, Josh Reynolds, giving you available free agents at the wide receiver position. I could get you them total, $10 million or less, and you take the dead cap hit this year and next year for Steph Diggs by way of trading him. In or out on that, if you're the Bills. We're not arguing that Steph Diggs is not better than those guys. Yeah. We know he is. What I think the reason for your question, Smalls, are the tweets and the assumed kind of weird thing that was going on last year with Josh Allen and Steph Diggs, where they just didn't seem to be on the same page.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not like we haven't seen people do this before, right? Like, I mean, I remember the Carolina Panthers moved on from Steve Smith once upon a time because they wanted it to be Cam Newton's team. And Steve Smith is still a good receiver. I mean, he's Hall of Fame-worthy career, but they moved on from him because they recognized that we got to elevate our quarterback, and with this veteran in place, it's going to be hard to do that based on personality type. So, yeah, I could see a world where the Buffalo Bills, Sean McDermott, and Brandon Bean decide, you know what, talent-wise, we might not be as good, but chemistry-wise, we might be better, and Josh could take it to another level. So, yeah, I could envision a scenario like that playing itself out. Even though we recognize that those guys ain't Steph Diggs, I think the combination of those guys plus Josh Allen ascending from a leadership standpoint puts the Bills in a good spot.
Last one, guys. I was still recovering from food poisoning over the weekend, so I laid low. I spent my weekend binging Dynasty, the Patriots 10-part documentary on Apple. And I didn't learn anything new. I kind of feel like I wasted a lot of time watching this. I thought there was going to be some juicy soundbite or a salacious story that came out of this. It really just was a big billboard for Robert Kraft and how important he was in the dynasty. We always talk about Brady and Belichick. To me, it was just shining a light on Robert Kraft and how important he was in all of this.
So what you're saying is rather than pulling a Jerry Jones and keeping Bill Belichick out of the Ring of Honor in perpetuity, just go ahead and come out with a 10-part documentary and say how great you were during that two decade run.
Basically,
I guess that's what happened.
Yeah, I mean, they all were great. I mean, you can't stay together. You know this better than anybody, CeCe. You can't stay together at that level, quarterback, coach, and owner, same three people for 20 years if you're not all great. If you want to say who is the antagonist of the film, who is the villain, there is no question it was Belichick.
But they needed him to be that in order to accomplish what they accomplished.
That's the point.
They needed that, just like Jimmy Johnson was that for the Dallas Cowboys. It has to be. You have to have that guy.
I could go on for hours on this one. There's more to have on that one. We will get to that at some point here on Unsportsmanlike on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Electric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Electric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Electric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.